Blog Talk Radio.
This is All About Wine, the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009. Featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. Again, that's www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And now, All About Wine is on. Here's Ron.
Us people, all excited. We got some wonderful guests tonight, so they're all excited to be here for the guests. And we got the movie Living Wine was directed by Laurie Miller, and it features winemaker Megan Bell plus others. But Megan and Laurie will be joining us tonight, talking about the movie and about the natural wine movement, and that's what Megan does, is make natural wine. That's what the movie's about, the natural wine movement. So they will be on, and we will be talking to them shortly. And next week we have a little variation from the standard All About Wine program. We are going to be talking to four cigar people and do a show about cigars. I mentioned before that a lot of people have their wine and cigars, or cognac and cigars, or any number of things with cigars. And we are going to have four of the cigar experts on. Actually, these guys write blogs about cigars and stuff, so it should be interesting. So mark your calendars and tune in next week for our variation of the show All About Wine, and we're going to be talking about cigars. It looks like we have one of our callers in here, our guest. I'm not sure if it's Laurie or Megan, but let's bring her on the show and find out. Hello, welcome to All About Wine.
Oh, hi, Ron. This is Laurie Miller. Thanks so much for having us.
All right. This is Laurie. I wasn't sure if it was you or Megan. So, well, thank you for joining us tonight. We really do appreciate it. There's a lot of things I want to talk about on the natural movement. So I sure wish Megan would get a chance to join us, because
I'm sure she'll jump on any second.
Okay, good. The natural movement, I've talked about it on the program before, and it's something that's becoming more and more prevalent, but you said only one. Well, there she is. That has to be her, because you're already here. Hello, Megan. Welcome to All About Wine.
Hi.
Hi. We've already got Laurie on the show here, so.
Hey, Megan.
We're all set here. I was just telling Laurie that we've talked about natural wine on the show here before in the past, and how it's a small part of the wine movement right now. But when you start looking at the whole thing, you've got your organic, then you've got your biodynamic, and you've got your natural, and all these other areas. It seems to me like wine is starting to take a more original, if you will, slant toward the making of wines. Am I not correct on this?
That was, this is probably a question for Megan, but I'll just say this is sort of one of the themes that interested me in making the film. I was unaware that wine actually wasn't natural when I first started the film.
Oh,
and when started to find out that it actually, you know, should be natural or originally was made, you know, of course was natural, I wanted to kind of, you know, explore this idea. And I was amazed at all the different, you know, philosophies and, you know, techniques that could be, you know, pursued within this sort of broad category. But I felt making the film that it was starting to really become more interesting to a larger group of people. But I'll let Megan jump in because she's, you know, the expert on that.
I think that there's, you know, within every mass category of wine, there are, you know, numerous subcategories, and we kind of allow space for that in conventional wine. And then people have, in the past, have just sort of pigeonholed all of natural wine into one category. And I think one of the things the film really helps highlight is that there's infinite subcategories of natural wine as well, just like there is with more conventional wines.
And that's an interesting point, too, because I rewatched the movie this afternoon. I saw it when you first sent it to us, and it's great, by the way. I have to tell you, it's very interesting and very informative. But I rewatched this afternoon so I could remember some of the questions and some of the things I wanted to talk about. And one of the things that it struck me was the fact that you said only one of the little things you had on the screen, 1% of the wines in California are natural, which seems awful low. And is it just California that is doing the natural movement, or is it happening elsewhere in the country and in the world?
Oh, it's definitely all over the world. It originates in France, and they've been doing it for decades and decades. And then, now in every single wine producing country, there's lots of producers that that are doing natural wine. And in the U.S., it's not just California. It's all the major wine producing states. You know, we have and some of the minor ones too, which is really fun. Like lots of people in Oregon and Washington and California, and then also in Texas and Vermont and North Carolina and New York. It's definitely a movement all over the country and the world.
And you know, the number that we put at the end of the film, you know, it's probably even grown since we completed the film. But what we were sort of thinking about were these huge corporate makers of wine that just make volumes and volumes and volumes, and just the natural wine producers, I think, for the most part, make smaller quantities because they're so thoughtful about how they actually create their wines, whereas the corporate winemakers, you know, I don't need to mention their names, but they mass produce the wine and they get it out, you know, to supermarkets and other outlets. So that was sort of the thought behind that.
Go on.
In terms of volume, natural wine is almost nothing. It's not just that folks in natural wine choose, you know, they have to be thoughtful. It's that it's not possible to make natural wine over a certain volume just because the potential spoilage because you are dealing with a food. The money loss of that if something went awry would just outweigh someone's ability to do a natural wine process. So that's we're limited because it's just not possible. But that's also one of the coolest things about it is that you have to be small.
That was one of the things that I loved, just, you know, trying the wines and now being a lover of natural wine is, you know, each winemakers will make wines that taste so different from, you know, year to year and vintage to vintage. And so, but, you know, Megan's describing a process that, you know, is thoughtful, but also, you know, handmade. And in my, you know, mind, it creates, you know, really, really amazing layers of flavors that I was not used to and have come to really love as well.
Now, I live in Florida, okay? Now, natural wines are noted for not having any extra chemicals added to them. Sulfites will help the wine travel and shelf. Obviously, you don't add extra sulfites, so doesn't that limit the scope of customers because of that?
Do you mean because the wine can't travel?
Well, yeah, it's limited on the shelf life and how long it will last before it does start showing its age before other wines.
I see. So I think that's a common misconception. So you don't really need that high amount of sulfites in order to stabilize a wine. Often folks are just, you know, in conventional winemaking are just making wine with a recipe of, you know, with red wines, we're adding 300 parts per million across the board, the max you can do. With white wines, 350, and that's just what we do, no matter whether or not it's needed. And then for us, you know, we're trying to do as little as possible, and a tiny amount of sulfites makes a huge difference, and I'm talking like 5 to 10 parts per million can I won't say permanently stabilize the wine, but definitely change the wine. In my opinion, for the better, most of the time, I do add a tiny bit of, I add about 20 parts per million of sulfites in all of my wines. Then another thing about that is that, sure, we might be adding less sulfites, but our pHs are way lower, which means we have way higher acidity. When you have high acid wine, the wine is more stable. So
right.
These conventional wines, even though they have way more sulfites added for quote-unquote stabilization, the pHs are insanely high. The wines are not acidic at all. They're made in a very heavy, fruity, you know, kind of chocolatey, syrupy style. So it's sort of like a give and take of which is more stable, like pH or sulfites. So
right, yeah, I understand. I when I was making wine and I had the winery, and I was bringing my sulfites up to about 40, 50 parts per million, and just to stabilize it, and you know, it's a little bit longer shelf life. But and the reason I said that is because I have been to liquor stores and I go, where's your natural wine? And they take me to a section, there might be one or two bottles there, and that's it. And every time I question it at any liquor store I go in, the person who answers the question always says, well, because they don't travel well, and so we can't get them in. Well, you know, yeah, it seemed silly to me. I mean, it really did. I mean, but, you know, I'm not going to start arguing with them about it because, well, you can't win those arguments.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think
no matter how much you try.
I think that there's just a lot of, just like the entire wine industry, there's a lot of misinformation because for some reason we make it seem like people are supposed to know about wine if they're, you know, a certain class or they make a certain amount of money or something. When really wine, just like any other subject, requires time and learning. So I think that instead of actually just folks saying like, you know, I'm not sure about that, people just sort of make up
reasons
right. for things.
Oh.
They perpetuate a lot of misconceptions that way.
You are so right. Believe me, I've been through that many times myself. And it's funny.
I'll just throw in there, you know, all the winemakers that I followed in the film, they all use sulfur to stabilize their wine. Similarly to what Megan was saying. So I do think this is a myth that's out there and a misconception, and it's great to be able to talk about that, you know, for an audience.
Yeah, well, it was never mentioned, and that's why I was bringing it up now. It wasn't mentioned in the film, and people have this fear of sulfites, as you all probably know. And when you start saying, "Why well, I add this little bit of sulfites," people are, you know, immediately grab their head and say, "Oh, I've got a headache now." You know, I mean, you know, it's ridiculous, and people need to understand that a little bit of sulfites is not a bad thing, and you know, you have to look at the other aspects, like you say, the pH and the acid and all that stuff really brings out the taste more than anything the sulfites are going to do.
Absolutely. And with sulfites, like, I'll say two things about it. I don't like to give it too much lip service just because it's such a ridiculous argument. But our bodies naturally produce sulfites, the exact same compound we're adding to wine, at about 10 parts per million per day. And then also, sulfites are in all processed meat.
Everything.
A lot of these folks who say things like that about sulfite, "Oh, sulfites give me a headache." And then I say, "Oh, do you eat dried fruit?" And they're like, "Yeah."
Exactly.
Dried fruit is sulfured. Most dried fruit, except for sulfured, has a level of sulfites that exceeds the max that wine can have. So
yes,
a lot of this.
It's funny you mentioned that. That used to be my argument too to people. "Oh, sulfites give me a headache." I said, "You like dried fruit? It contains about 350 parts per million." And you know, they look at me like, "Well, no, yeah, yeah." So I'm sorry. I used the same argument, and I just had to.
Yeah, I'm going to throw one thing in too. When I was interviewing, I think it was Derek. He was saying that he thinks that the reason why people get headaches from conventional wine is from the addition of possibly 1, 2, 3, or 5 additives. And as he thinks, the cocktail of the additives and not the sulfur is what's giving people headaches when they drink wine. I don't know if Megan, do you have the same philosophy about that? That was something I learned making the film.
It certainly could be that, but I have a different theory, which is it's simply residual sugar. Like when people are out drinking cocktails that have a lot of sugar at bars all night, they're always super hungover, you know, because of all that sugar. And conventional wine is full of residual sugar because it's made for, you know, to be tailored to an American palate. And they've done studies about, you know, what the mass wine drinkers want, and they want sugar. So when they're drinking a bunch of wine, you end up with a crazy hangover because you were drinking basically cocktails in your wine.
And not to mention alcohol, and alcohol is going to give you a headache too. I mean, if you're not careful with that, and so you get that combination of sugars and alcohol, and you know, you're going to have a headache. I mean, that's simple, you know, but you're right. I think it is sugars more than anything that cause it. But sulfite, I mean, wine contains all sorts of stuff, and these big commercial wineries do play with it a lot to try to come up with the ultimate, every year, the same taste. And, you know, I bought this 5 years ago, and it's so good, and I keep drinking it year after year. Well, it takes some manipulation and some chemicals and stuff to get that balance. And so I'm sure there are different things there. And, you know, it's you can't convince people otherwise, I'm afraid, though. So.
Yeah. Well, we tried to address that a little bit in the film. And, you know, I think one of the reasons I kept going, I wasn't sure, you know, was this going to be a short, a feature? Was it going to be anything? But I was just so surprised to learn what you just explained, that and what Megan just mentioned. It's people's palates demand a certain taste, and the winery, the commercial wineries, want the wines to taste the same every year. And that was so interesting to me. I was like, wow, we got to get that in there too.
Yeah, and it's amazing. You made a good point of that, though. All the different winemakers mentioned that. Megan, I have to. You mentioned something about the women and how they're treated in Napa. Is that still going on now in this day and age?
Oh yeah, I mean, it's certainly not just Napa. It's everywhere.
Well,
everywhere.
Yeah. Well, we're talking yeah. about wine. But I mean, you know, it, yeah. But I mean, you know, just from what you're saying, you know, it just it seemed like the wine industry has matured past that, but maybe it hasn't.
I would say it definitely has not.
Wow.
I am a less sensitive to it now just because the way in which I interact with, you know, vendors and other people in the community is sort of kind of professional and kind of cold and powerful, just given my position now. But as I was learning and working for other folks, I was the, you know, same exact person, but a lot more timid because I was building my career and trying to learn and still unsure. And that type of attitude is exactly where most of the wine industry wants women to be. They
wow.
want them to feel unsure. They don't belong in the space. And I don't think that is particular to the wine industry. I think that's,
well, no, it isn't.
You know,
it's in corporate. It's in a lot of stuff. There's no question about it. But it surprised me about the wine industry, and I really do agree with you. It's not just in the wine industry. It's in all fields of our society. But I thought the wine industry has matured past that. I really do. I mean, the wine people I know embrace women as part of their system, and but it's here in Florida, and there's not as many wineries, and it's not as big as California, obviously. But it just surprised me to hear that you said that in the movie.
Yeah, I think that a lot of, you know, the places I'm thinking of where I've had bad experiences would also say that they embrace women in their industry, but we need to actually talk to the women and hear from their point of view how it felt to work at the place instead of just taking, you know, the word.
That's an
the
interesting,
word of the company.
Interesting point. There you go, Laura. There's another documentary
yeah,
for you.
Well, I mean, one of the things that I thought was so interesting about the way Megan was describing this is a lot of the discrimination is very, very subtle. It's sort of like, well, would you rather do this instead, you know, or...
yeah.
You know, a friend of mine who is a lawyer in the film industry recently got her daughter golf lessons, and she said the reason why is because in the film industry, all the deals get made playing golf, and very
yeah.
few women play golf. So there's kind of these mm-hmm. very subtle things that go on that may not seem obvious, but they really do add up and they make a difference, and I think it's really great to be able to talk about those as well.
That would be a great documentary to, you know, to explore that, and not in an accusatory way, but in an enlightening way. I think people
Absolutely.
Would be receptive to that.
And, yeah. I
right,
think,
in
I
a
think,
positive way. Yeah. Sorry,
yeah.
Megan.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll say the same thing. I think you really hit the nail on the head there. It's not about being accusatory and, you know, jumping down people's throats. It's about showing people that actually these folks feeling the way that they're supposedly feeling, and, you know, kind of opening up a window into that, and having more and more people have this realization like, oh, maybe in my own life, in my own job, maybe they own something or they're a manager, maybe I should be like asking the women that work for me about this. You know, it's all connected.
Exactly.
And it's about being welcoming to that idea and sharing, trying to work together for a better future.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I think that's good. Lori, you've got yourself your next movie there, right? Right there.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really interesting. And the thing, you know, that I also kind of picked up making the film is, there are just so many aspects to the wine industry. There's the, you know, there was a story a few years ago that came out about the, you know, how do you become a high-level sommelier, and I probably mispronounced that, and
no,
there was
even.
A lot
That's
of
good.
Discrimination in that world as well.
Oh, yeah.
There's, you know, it's throughout the wine industry, and as Megan said earlier, just every industry. And I think it's really great to be able to, you know, put some of that out there and just have people think a little bit more about maybe some of the either subtle or more obvious ways that it continues to go on.
Yeah, and I have to say, I was, you know, I'm being a little bit enlightened myself now because I didn't realize that it was that rampant in the wine industry. I thought the wine industry had progressed past that, but obviously not, which is sad. It's sad to think that it hasn't, but
yeah.
Yeah, it really is. Megan, you said at the beginning of the movie that you were sitting there waiting for your grapes to come in. And I understood that that was before your vineyard was producing. Did you purchase your first grapes, and were those natural or organic? What? Clarify this, would you please?
Sure. So I have always purchased my grapes because I don't own any land. I do help farm a vineyard, the one in the movie. Larry, the owner, and I farm that together. And I'm the only one that has commercially made wine from that vineyard. But I still purchase those grapes from Larry, even though I help farm them. And that's just one of about 12 vineyards that I work with. And I don't help farm at any of the others because just farming one is a full-time thing. All of the others, I actually purchase the fruit. When I first started, the vineyard that I worked with was not organic, but I really, really wanted it to be. So over the last, about 5 or 6 years, I helped growers transition their vineyards to organic through, being a resource of connecting them with other people, being just another ear to bounce ideas off of, and just continuing to encourage them toward this idea with the goal for them of me being able to purchase a larger amount of fruit from them. So, it's easier for them because if it's organic, then I can go kind of all in on it at these smaller vineyards. Whereas if it's not, I'm like, well, if you're only going to farm part of it organic, then I only want that part. And then they have to deal with a bunch of different buyers. So it ends up so complicated for them. And as of vintage 2021, last year, all 12 vineyards I work with are organic.
Oh, fantastic. All right. Have you ever used... I'm sorry. Go ahead, Lori.
No, I wasn't going to say anything. I'll just reiterate that pretty much almost everyone in the film had a similar model as Megan's. The resources that one would need to own, you know, property in Northern California and own these farms. It's not really conducive to maybe an entrepreneur who, you know, starting out on their own. So I thought this was really, we didn't really address it in the film, but I personally thought it was a great business model that all the winemakers were helping convert conventional. We did show Derek working with Ben, who's actually my brother, converting his vineyards to organic, but I think that, you know, maybe they'll make a dent over time working, spreading their message and helping to, you know, change these farms from conventional to organic or regenerative farming.
Yeah, organic, yeah, I mean, the certification, it takes about 5 years to get your full certification on it. It's not an easy process to do that. You just said something there, Laura, and it caught me. Your brother, is he part of the...
Yeah, my brother's how I got involved in the subject matter. He just has a very, very small vineyard. He does some farming kind of on the side. And he had he got me interested in the subject. I didn't know that natural wine existed, which almost seems unbelievable at this point because, you know, it's such a big part of my life at this point. But, you know, and that was sort of the inspiration. It's a long story, but his house had burned down in the Tubbs fire in Santa Rosa, and he found a property that was kind of off the grid that had a small vineyard, and he was very interested in, you know, making wine and making, you know, all kinds of food. And he found out that the vineyard was being farmed with all kinds of synthetic pesticides, including Roundup. And he connected with Derek Trowbridge, who's also in the film, also a natural winemaker, and started the conversion process. And I filmed just a little bit of that. But I do think this, you know, the conversion of vineyards is a really positive development. Even if it's done on a small scale, people start to hear about it and want to learn how to do, you know, farming that's better for the environment.
Oh, by all means. Megan, back to you again. Or biodynamic, have you looked at any vineyards that are doing biodynamic, and do you think it would make a difference in the natural wine movement?
A long time ago, I was a biodynamics coordinator for a season at one of
Where
my internships.
Really? Or,
yeah, it was really great. So my job was to harvest the plants for the sprays around the property. That for biodynamics, the sprays that you spray onto the leaves and ground are usually found from local plants that are right around the vineyard. That's the goal. And there's specific plants that you use. So I would harvest them, and then I would make the biodynamic teas out of them. It's exactly what it sounds like, just soaking those leaves in water. And then with a special sprayer set up that we had kind of jerry-rigged, I would then fill up the copper tanks on the ATV and then do the sprays in the vineyard. So I learned a lot about biodynamics there. That was in Oregon. And then I also worked at Burn Cottage in New Zealand, which is an organic vineyard in Otago. And I definitely think biodynamics is great. It's not as complicated as people make it out to be. It's simply about using the plants that we have for their natural remedies, like their anti-mildew properties, their anti-pest properties. That's it. And, you know, it seems like sort of a woo-woo complicated thing, but it's just about using what we already have instead of spraying synthetic chemicals.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing with biodynamic, though, everybody goes, oh, yeah, okay, is because of the planting of the horns by the moon phases and things like that. And I think it's sort of like a some people look at it as I don't know, voodoo. No, that's a bad word. But you know, it's not like something you would normally do. And I think that's what's giving biodynamics sort of a strange reputation, is because of some of the practices that go with it. Not just the spraying stuff.
Yeah, I think people are just less and less connected to the natural world. So doing something by the phases of the moon sounds kind of crazy to us in America, but we do things by the phases of the moon for millennia. That is, you know, it's part of how people evolved. It's part of this planet. And it's not that crazy to follow a moon calendar when you spend more time outside and when you live a life that's more determined by the seasons. So if people have ever been camping, if they've been camping on a night of a new moon versus the night of a full moon, like, it makes the whole experience feel totally different. And it's not that crazy of an idea, you know, it's just very different feeling. So the same thing applies. That said, I don't currently work with any biodynamic vineyards. I would love to incorporate that into the vineyard that I farm. However, I still am a one-person company, and I just don't have time to do that yet.
And it becomes a very time-consuming project, too, when you start you know, switching over from one style to another. Yeah. Lori, the natural wine movement, is it something that you hope is going to catch on more with this film, or what is your ultimate goal of making this film?
Well, I think the goal was kind of multi-layered. I found the people in the film really, really inspirational, and I think that our world right now is just so corporatized and commercialized, and it was just, I felt just so lucky to be able to meet this diverse group of people that were doing things based on their interior belief system and not, you know, what outside society was kind of telling them what to do. And I was hoping that that would be, you know, inspirational to the next generation of young people going out into the world as they pursue their careers. So that was one thing that I was just fell in love with making the film. And, you know, the other thing I felt like is, you know, when it comes to trying to fight the corporate marketing, you know, industrial complex, you know, it's a little filmmaker like me doesn't have a lot of power, but I do hope that some people will see the film and want to try natural wines, because I think, number one, they're just unbelievably delicious and, you know, wonderful to drink. But I do think that if consumers start to change their behaviors, it does put pressure on the corporations, and it gives the natural wine entrepreneurs a bigger platform. It's better for the environment. It's better for our health. It's just a win-win. So, yes, hoping that people will try natural wine.
Well, embrace it. Good.
Yes.
Lori, you can be part of this answer, too. Natural wines. I've had natural wines, and I've had my winery. I had natural wines. I've closed the winery, but I've had natural wines. I've had biodynamic. I've had, the gamut of possibilities on wines. And I know what I'm looking for because I'm a wine person. You know what you're looking for because you're wine people. But will the average consumer out there who picks up a bottle of natural wine really see the difference?
They're going to be able to see the difference immediately. It's like apples and oranges. It's just a totally, totally different product. Like with if people are just used to buying wines off the shelf at the grocery store, you know, most of those are made by the same three companies, huge conglomerates in the U.S., and a lot of those are actually the exact same wine, just with a different label put on it, which is totally legal. And if that's all you've ever had, then having a wine that is literally alive, like our natural wines, if you put them on a slide under a microscope, they would move, which is good. It's like different types of juice and kombucha, you know, beverages that are actual living, healthy, fermented beverages for you. They taste so juicy and bright and crunchy, and it's like drinking fruit because you're actually drinking just grape juice that was fermented for the first time instead of what you thought was just fermented grape juice, but was actually grape juice with, you know, 20 other additives in it to make it taste that way.
Processed, yes. Huh. A lot of wineries do process their wines. So, crunchy. I don't know if I would use crunchy for a wine. That would scare people. The natural compared to process, okay, to the conglomerates. But if someone is into, say, organic, is natural wine a better taste than the organic, would you say?
I mean, from my point of view, that was a distinction that I learned making the film. It's natural wine is so much tastier than organic, because the thing, I'll just give a quick answer and throw it over to Megan, but my understanding is that organic wine may also be, might be processed in the production portion of making of the wine, so you're not getting the actual just fruit the way Megan was describing a little bit earlier.
Yeah,
but Megan,
exactly,
please correct me on that one.
No, you're exactly right. Wines that are labeled as organic wine, that's a totally different distinction, which is really a bummer that we've made this so confusing for consumers. Like, I get it. I totally understand why people are like, wait, what? But organic wine simply means that the grapes were from an organic vineyard and there were no added sulfites. However, there are 70 plus other additives that can be added to wine that you don't need to list on the label, and you are allowed to use those in organic wine. So organic wine is not necessarily natural wine.
Mm-hmm. But natural wine.
I've had organic wines that have that generic taste that we were talking about, that a lot of the commercial wineries try to create when they're making their wines. And it was surprising to me, and I realized, you know, this is, you know, I hope that people, you know, are able to tell the difference, because I think the natural wines are the, you know, the, as somebody said in the film, are much more like tasting the actual grape.
And good. That's really what they should be looking for then. So if you're going to compare a natural wine to organic or regular wines, then you would say grapey would be the one-word descriptor there?
I would say fresher.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I would say multi-layered. I think the flavors are, you know, they're interesting, and, you know, you can't get tired of the wines.
Now, are you... Well, okay, because I'm, you know, people are listening to this and they're going, oh, natural wine, what's the big deal with, you know, and I'm going to try to establish what they should be looking for if they go out and buy a natural wine. Now, why, okay, I went out to try to find natural wine. I tried to find some natural wine. I tried to find some biodynamic wines at the stores and stuff like this. And there are so few of them out there. And some stores I'd go into, and I found this one store, Lukens. I don't know if they have those on the West Coast, but the liquor chain here, Lukens. And I went to this one, a very knowledgeable person, and he said that a lot of times you don't see labels telling you that they are natural or biodynamic because people are afraid of those labels. Your thoughts on that comment?
I don't think that's necessarily accurate, but the thing about finding natural wine is that you can't really find it at the normal, like, liquor store or grocery store. You really need to go to a wine shop or a restaurant that sells natural wine. And then their whole list is going to be natural. And then you're going to be able to choose from tons of different things. And if there's like a certain wine style that you have in mind that you really like in like the conventional wine world, you are going to be able to find something similar to that in natural wine. You just have to communicate with the shop representatives to let them know what you're looking for. And they're going to be able to pick something out that you're almost guaranteed going to like. If you take, you know, three bottles, I'm sure you'll like at least one. And you'll be like, oh, this has some flavors that are familiar to me, but they're so much more multifaceted than I've ever tried before.
I just want to throw in there that many of the natural winemakers, actually, you can buy their wines and try them directly from their websites as well. And there are all kinds of websites that, you know, list multiple natural winemakers. You can try different ones from time to time. But you can order wine from Megan, which is delicious.
That's, well, before we leave, I'm going to have Megan give all of her information so people can. I lost what I was going to say there. Natural. Oh, I know one. What grapes do you use, Megan? What is your wines? What are the ones you use, and what are the wines you make?
So I make so many different. I make about 20 different types
of really?
Wine. I
wow.
do, and I focus lesser known vineyards and varietals that are quote unquote on the margins. That's why the company is called Margins Wine. So how I choose is just. Is it an organic vineyard? Is it a unique grape? Or is it a region that nobody has heard of? And maybe the grape is a little less unique. But the biggest volume of wine that I make is Chenin Blanc. But then I make about, like I said, about 19 others. I make lots of red wine as well.
Give me some of the obscure ones that you're making. I'm very curious about that.
Sure. I make Negrette. I make Assyrtiko. I make Verdejo. Cunoise. Mourvèdre. Nebbiolo. Muscat Blanc. And then I also make... like Pinot Noir. I also make Pinot that everyone's heard of, you know.
Chardonnay.
And yeah, so I try to do, I don't make Chardonnay, but
you don't?
I try to do a wide variety of different types of grapes that are all done in a similar style, but taste totally different just because the grape is different. And you're really, with natural wine, including mine, you're getting to taste just what that grape tastes like without being manipulated.
That's a great approach to it. I like that. That would give people a chance to try these different obscure grapes that they probably heard of but never tried and wouldn't know what they taste like. And they try yours, they'll get spoiled and want to and not be able to go back to any others.
I mean, that's the goal, right?
It is the goal. That is the goal. Lori, do you have plans for your next project yet? Do you know what you're looking at in the future?
Thanks for asking that. I am working on a few ideas, but nothing is up and running yet. So I don't have any news, but we're also... working on the distribution of this one for a few months, and hopefully I'll have something up and running in 2023.
Oh, well, again, you're going to have to do a documentary on women in the workforce too. That I think that would be very, very interesting. But you say distribution.
I love that idea.
I think it's great. I personally do. Yeah. I think it's fantastic because I was, again, speaking of the wine industry, I thought we had progressed further than what you have said we do. So Lori, you say distribution. Where is the movie going to be opening? And, tell us what's happening with this so people can jump out there and actually see what we're talking about here.
Oh, great. Yeah, the film for a few months is going to be screening in independent movie theaters throughout the country. We have a distributor, Brahmarama is their name, and we have a website called Winefilm, wine.film, and it will list all the upcoming screenings, which will be posted as they book them. This coming weekend, we're opening up at the Quad Theater in New York. We're going to be at the Lemley Theater in Santa Monica, and we have screenings booked in a few other places. So we're in about 10 cities right now, and we're hoping to keep it rolling for a while.
So Winefilm, if people go to wine.film, they can check Living Wine and to see where you're going to be coming to a theater near them.
Exactly.
Okay, very good, very good. And Megan, before I forget, too, and I just heard my wife stuck her head in the door here, And right before we came, you guys joined us and said that there's vineyards burning in France right now about the size of the city of Paris. And I was shocked to hear that. I didn't know if you'd heard that yet, but the heat over there and all that, y'all can sympathize with the problems of fires around vineyards, I'm sure. So that's just a sad thing there. And since I did mention fires, Megan, have you had any problem with smoke paint?
In 2020, it was definitely an issue. Yeah, I mean, you saw the movie. Everything in California was burning from the lightning fires that summer, including the area that I live and work in. And luckily, the vineyard that I farm wasn't shrouded in smoke for very long.
Oh,
so the fruit was usable. But lots of vineyards in this area had to just drop their crop because there was actually smoke just sitting outside of the grapes for, you know, a month. And grapes, just like our skin, grapes have pores and they transpire. They basically breathe through their skin. So if there is just smoke around them, that is getting incorporated inside of the grape. So it's definitely an issue. Smoke taint is going to be a huge problem going forward, especially in California and as we see in Australia and France and I'm sure all over the world, unless we can make some major changes. But yeah, the wine industry is definitely working on researching ways to combat smoke taint. And natural wine, you know, doesn't have the luxury of using a chemical corrective. So we have an especially large challenge before us as smoke taint continues to be an issue.
Without question. I mean, it's I've talked about smoke taint. In fact, whenever I see any new reports or stuff like that, I always bring it up. And one of the things I have brought up is how they're finding new ways to combat it with chemicals. But the natural wine movement is pretty much stuck because of your name, Natural. And so,
yeah. So we learned a lot as a movement in 2020 with natural wine and how to still make wine with potentially smoke tainted grapes. And really what it ends up being is a lot of rosé. And because when you press really light on the grapes and you don't leave them on the skins for very long to get that red wine color and you just press in right away super light and you end up getting the pink wine, you can really combat the issue of smoke taint that way. And luckily, people love the taste of rosé, so it could be worse. But people should definitely expect to see less and less red wines on the shelves of natural wine shops. Any year that there was a fire.
Okay. That's something to be aware of there. Lori, was climate change something that you intended to address? Was it just something you had to address because it's so obvious in California and around the world, but in California and affecting the natural wine movement?
Yeah, I mean, one of the really interesting things about making documentaries is, you know, you can't really determine exactly where the story is going to go when you start your exploration. And I did feel that it was going to be a part of the story because we were already dealing with higher temperatures and droughts, you know, in California, mm-hmm. and forest fires on and off. And I started to become, one of the reasons I was interested in the subject was from the farming side. You know, I realized that industrial farming, whether it's vineyards or any type of agriculture, is terrible for the environment, climate change. So I started to research that, and, you know, I was hoping to layer the farming piece into the film. And literally in the middle of making the film, the wildfires, you know, came.
Wow.
And it just drove the issue home. It's, you know, like Megan said, unless we make changes really quickly, you know, we're not in a good place. And I was glad to have the opportunity to show this, but it was just very upsetting to see the winemakers going through this, and continues to be.
Oh, yeah, and like I say, is, you know, in France right now, they're having major fires and vineyards and stuff, and it's continuing around the world. I've addressed this quite a bit on the program over the years, and it's not something that's going away, I'm afraid. It's something that's here with us for a while. And
yeah, it's really tragic, you know, just to see that it's happening in Bordeaux, where, you know, they are working with these very, very, well, what I assume are very old vines as well. So we're losing
yes.
a piece of history as well.
Yeah, it's devastating. It really is. And it's, like you say, extremely sad. Megan, you mentioned 19 wines. Price range from what to what?
They range from about $28 to $35. I try to keep them.
Oh, that's reasonable. That's not
in a
bad.
Very reasonable. Yeah.
No, I was, you know, I mean, when you start talking California wines, you start talking 50, 60, 80. You know, I mean, you know, when you're keeping that around $35 and lower, that's really a good price. I'm impressed with your price structure already. That's great.
Thank you.
Yeah,
well,
I want
lots of different people to be able to actually try these wines, and I don't want them to be cost prohibitive for everyone. I understand that, you know, $30 is still quite a bit to pay for a lot of people, but hopefully that's something that they could splurge on as like a special bottle and have it full.
And if it's something that they enjoy, it's something that they can work into their budget. I used to always tell people when they came out to the winery, I said, don't always go back to your default wines that cost $10, $12. Every once in a while, jump up and grab a wine that cost $25, $30. I said, you will be amazed at the difference. And I used to have mm-hmm. people come back in and tell me, once I tried those, I could never go back to the $10 or $12 bottle of wine again. So that what would happen with you. They would try yours and go, oh, I can never go back to those again. So they would get them hooked on them right away. Okay, before we leave here, Megan, tell us contact information, your web address, your Facebook email, any way that anybody can get a hold of you or the winery if they want to order wines or check it out and all that.
Sure. I'm really easy to find. I'm on Instagram. I'm just at Margins Wine, MarginsWine, and the website is the same, marginswine.com.
Very good. Okay. And You have, like you say, a whole bunch of different wines, so somebody can always find something that they can enjoy and all that. And do you ship to almost every state, or are you limited, or what's your shipping?
I do ship to almost every state. This time of year is not a good time to be shipping wine.
No, not at all.
Once it cools down again, yes, I am shipping to more than 40 states.
Fantastic. Okay. And Lori, Living Wine, a comment on why people should go see this?
Well, I think, you know, as we said, it addresses, you know, so many levels of issues that we're going through in society right now, climate change being one of them. But I just think whoever doesn't know about natural wine might really enjoy learning about it and seeing these people at work.
Yes, it is a very interesting show. Mike, before we say goodbye to Lori and Megan, any comments, anything you'd like to ask them?
No, you've already, I had a couple of questions regarding the movie distribution. You already covered that and how Lori got involved in it, in the subject and everything. So you answered that. I had a question about a video I was watching on Margins Wine. I believe that was Megan. It's the video on the About page, and I couldn't figure out what you were doing the wine barrel. It has some kind of pipe going out of it, but I couldn't figure out. Now I'm thinking, well, it's called Look-See. Is she looking in the barrel with a flashlight, or is that like – it looked like a straw. And I was like, is she taking wine? What's going on?
Drinking wine,
I don't know. But
it
looks like a possibility. I don't know what you're – what is that?
Anyone who wants to check that out, you can find that video on the About page of my website. And that's actually really simple. It is like a straw. It's connected to a pump, and it's how we move wine around in the winery. It's how we move wine in and out of barrels with that kind of giant straw.
That part, but I kind of got that part. But you're holding something. I can't tell if it's a flashlight in this video. Maybe I should watch it full screen. Is it a flashlight? You were looking real close.
That's a great question. That video was filmed 3 years ago, so I'm probably holding a flashlight, and I'm probably filling barrels. I'm probably looking to see how much is left in there.
I paused it, and I go, that looks like a flashlight. Maybe she's just looking in there, but I thought you were, like, doing some kind of taste test or something. I don't know. That was it, and I'm glad we got all the information out on where it's showing, and everyone, please go check out wine.film. There's plenty of information there. You can watch a trailer of Living Wine, as well as more information out there, plus press releases and the director's statement, which I'm on now. Check it out for more information about the documentary, and visit marginswine.com and check out everything there, including that video on the About page, and see what it's 3 years ago. Okay. Memories. There you go. Looks like you have a wine club shopping, you know, online, but again, this time of year, not too sure. It's like 100 and something. Anyway, way too long. But that's fantastic. Well, thank you all for being on the show. I really appreciate it. It was very, very good and informative for sure. Thank you. Kind of opened
really,
my
really appreciate
wine.
The opportunity. Thanks
thank you
me.
Both very much for taking the time out this evening, or this afternoon, since you're on the West Coast, for joining us on the show. We very informative, like Mike just said, and people get out and watch the movie and check out the website for Margin Wines and order some wines. You don't have to get them right away, but you know, get your orders in for Thanksgiving and stuff like that. So there you go. Thank you both for joining
us
tonight.
Thanks
again.
Have a good day. Thank you. Good
bye now.
Thank you. Oh, that's loud. Wow, that was loud. It's people need to back away a little bit. The applause. All right.
Great interview. That was a lot of fun.
There you go.
Interesting. Yeah,
very
interesting
cool.
Stuff on it. I watched the movie again, like I told him. I watched the movie again this afternoon just to refresh myself on some of the questions I wanted to ask. Because when I watched it the first time, when you first sent it to me a couple of weeks ago, I guess it was, when I watched it the first time, I said, I need to ask about that. And then I, forgot. So I figured,
I haven't watched it yet. I'm like,
you haven't.
Thinking,
oh, you need
you know, to. And, no, I need to. Yeah, I need to go.
You need
go
to go see it. It's interesting. It really is interesting. Interesting what they had to say about organic. There's some nice scenes on there about what they're doing, and there was another guy who was on there a lot. I got a blank right now. I can't think of his name, but he was talking about the natural movement and stuff like that. And we were talking about the different wineries, and it's very interesting. You'll enjoy it. So,
check it out.
It's like an hour and a half long. So allow the time for it, but,
it
was very good.
Definitely. Well, I was watching the one that whoever filmed the one with Megan on the Margins Wine website on the about page. There's a part where they just show the vineyard, and there's no music, no talking, no quiet. It's just kind of like a breeze and what are they, crickets, I guess? What makes the sound?
Yeah.
Is it crickets? I don't know. But
crickets
just listen to that, and I was like, oh my God, I could fall asleep. I mean, just, you know, and just relax, you know, and the video was well done and you know, just a great view of the vineyard and everything. And it was even that, you know, just taking a quick tour of everything and seeing everything she does there. She does a lot. I mean, she does
a lot. Yeah.
Driving the equipment, you know, processing everything, carrying the I don't know, barrels or something. I mean, it was like, wow.
Yeah, it shows it on the video, on the movie too. It shows her, you know, doing all sorts of different stuff and all that. She does keep herself quite busy, and she does an excellent job. I'm definitely going to have to check the site and order a couple of wines from there, because I'm really curious. You know, they're talking about the natural wines. I've had natural wines, but it would be nice to get a natural wine directly from the winery, and that would be
the way to do it.
Especially
after talking to the winemaker.
Yes.
Especially after talking to the winemaker. You go, oh,
yeah, talk to the winemaker and get the natural wine. Yeah, that would be good. So I'm going to have to order some of those. I'll probably wait until it cools down a little bit, though, because shipping wine across country in this temperature, it's would cook it. Yeah. I mean, literally, it would cook it.
Really?
So, yeah, it would.
They don't give it like a special cooling or anything?
No, put it in a box and ship it. And right now, Arizona, all the wineries in Arizona have signs up. If you order wine now, we will not ship until the end of September, because it's just too hot to try to ship. A lot of places do that. I'm sure New Mexico does the same thing. And some hotter areas, they just will not ship in this hot weather, because it just cooks the wine. I mean, that's the word that's used. Mm. It cooks it, and it just destroys it.
I didn't realize that. Okay.
Yeah. So they're supposed to say order it for Thanksgiving, but you know, not before. Yeah. You know, so.
Okay.
But yeah.
Well,
interesting. Interesting movie. Interesting interview. You need to check out that movie. Yeah. And everyone out there, check out. Next week we have a special All About Wine show on cigars. So tune in next week. It should be funny. And
that's
fun.
Loud. I don't know if it's that loud on here.
It is loud. Yeah, I don't know why.
Cap was actually in chat when the show started, and he says, looking forward to coming on next week. And I said, same here. Good to be going to be a fun show. So, looking forward to that. Cap Lewitz.
I want to be able to sit down in my chair. And...
that guy.
That guy. You should play the rest of the clip. That's funny.
Oh, okay. All right. This is Cap Kaplowitz from at the time that he was on talking about the cigar show and everything that he does. So this is a little clip. It was hilarious.
I want to be able to sit down in my chair and have my ashtray, my cigar, a little bit of a libation if I decide to have that. And I want to be able to just be there. And if somebody comes over to me, I want to be able to yell at them and tell them to go away. And I wanted my voice to carry, and it carries better indoors when I say, why are you bothering me?
Yeah, that's Cap.
Can't miss it, folks. He's going to be on, and the whole crew is going to be on. What do you have? Four guests?
Four guests? Four of them, yeah. We got
on.
Craig and Mike and Phil and Cap is going to be on. All cigar people, all of them very knowledgeable in cigars. All of them write blogs, all of them review cigars. If you have any questions about cigars between now and then, definitely get them into us, because they'll be more than happy to address any of your questions. And so, but it should be a fun show. So, so that's coming up next week. Yeah. And then on August the 11th, we have a guest that he just needs to confirm. I won't you know, announce stuff until I get a confirmation. But August 11th, we got a guest coming up. Got some exciting weeks coming ahead for us here. So stay tuned to All About Wine.
Sounds like it. Yeah, good plan. We'll see you all next week, which will be, I don't know. Oh, the 28th, June 28th, or July 28th. Oh, wow.
July.
I'm in the wrong month. July 28th. It's already almost August. Thank y'all for tuning in. Have a great week ahead and a weekend. And be safe. We'll talk to you next week.
Lori Miller and Megan Bell again for being our guests tonight.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And
very, very
be
good.
Safe
very
out
good
there.
Guest. And go out there and check out their websites as well.
See you
okay. Right. Wine.film and marginswine.com. All right.
Yep, there you go.
We'll see you all next week. Thank you.
See you next Happy week. One. Be safe.
Bye. Thank you.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinedpr.com. Archived shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
All About Wine.
Okay.
I'm going to the green room.
Oh, okay.